so much importance to having that time in your schedule. And actually, I allocate an hour every day to work on myself. And I don't mean that in a sort of, I mean that maybe that's reading a book, maybe that's watching some content, maybe that is sitting quietly for an hour, maybe, you know, because when people come into like my team, when I used to manage team and say, you know, I work from 7 till 11, I'm just like, so how productive are you? I bet you I could be more productive because I've just got better habits in place. So I think it's about finding the habits that work for you, for sure. And creating them so that they really work for you and work for you sort of immediately on what's on your plate today, but also knowing that you're investing in your future, investing in the relationships that you need to put in place, and doing that sort of visibility part of your job that is going to pay you back so much so as you go forward in your career, no matter where you are right now.
Hi, and welcome to the Sunday Lunch Project Manager podcast for Sunday, the 7th of May, 2023. This is your host, Nigel Creaser, and today we've got Laura Chattington on the show, chatting about how to restart our careers. So what's been going on? I have been messing around a little bit more with audio, trying to push it out a little bit wider. I think I mentioned last time that I had managed to make it available on Kobo. If you did, weren't aware, grab your Kobo. If you're on Kobo Plus, I think you can get it free. It's easy to get at there. So there's the audiobook version of the books out there. I'm trying to get it wider to others and a few libraries and things like that, digital libraries that are out there. Through a firm called Publish Drive that I use. So a little bit of back and to on that with some of the requirements that they have. Been playing a little bit with TikTok. My little one, who likes her CapCut videos and doing all the different transition videos, has been playing around and doing some stuff for me. So pop across to TikTok, Nigel Creaser Author. I'm on there. You'll see what's going on around there. Yeah, and there's not a great deal more to talk about, really. I have had the odd bit of playing with ChatGPT. What I'm going to do with that later, I don't know, and how that can work with us. Had some fantastic interviews talking to Alex Kingsbury last week, Melissa Romo the week before, and I've got two or three great interviews coming up over the next few weeks. So more content coming to you every week. It seems to be building. I think I've got people scheduled into October and actual recordings through to the summer. I'll take a break in the summer again. What I'll do this year, and if it'd be interesting to hear from anyone who has a view, but what I'll probably try and do a few replays from some of the earlier shows that some of you may have not listened to or forgotten about, not sure which ones I'll put in first, but maybe fill in the gap with a few of the older episodes. If you have any older episodes that you think new listeners would benefit from, ping me a message, nige@nigelcreaser.com, or suggestions, whatever you want at nigelcreaser.com. It'll come to me anyway, I'll find it. Get that across to me. And I think that's all I was going to say, really. And enjoy the conversation with Laura. It's fascinating thinking about how we as project managers think about our careers and how we should really think about them from a... if we thought of them the way we thought of our projects, and if we had enough knowledge and confidence about talking about ourselves, it'd make a massive difference. So enjoy. Speak soon. Bye. Hello and welcome, Laura Chattington, to the show. Laura has nearly 20 years' experience of directing multi-million pound global communications accounts and communicating up to C-level executives. She's delivered and facilitated events and training sessions to hundreds of people around the world, including London, Lisbon, Singapore, Geneva, South Africa. Travel more than me. She specializes in presenting and influence, and she's a master of neurolinguistic programming and a certified coach, having trained with one of the two co-founders and specializing in communication and influence. As well as individuals, she has trained teams from companies including Deloitte, IBM, Facebook, Oracle, Social Finance, and the NHS. Her business helps professionals who feel like their careers are plateauing or not progressing fast enough. She helps them elevate themselves into the workplace and fast track their careers. So if you've had your career plateauing, today's probably a really good conversation, and I think a lot of us as PMs find that. She also tells me she's a really fast mountain biker, downhill. She loves her Arsenal football team, but loves helping people from plateau in their careers more than anything. So, Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Nigel, and thank you for that introduction. Yes, Arsenal and mountain biking downhill at breakneck speed are very important in my life, as is helping people who they feel their careers are plateauing. So thank you for that amazing introduction.
That's brilliant. We've heard a little bit about Arsenal and mountain biking. Tell us a little bit about you and your background, where you're from, and maybe a little dusting of what your career has been before.
Yeah, so actually we were talking just before we started recording, my background for people who are watching or listening this. I actually started out my career as, believe it or not, I was a software engineer technical graduate back before it was cool. I'm that old that it was before Google existed. And I graduated as a programmer. And in those days, programmers used to sort of sit in rooms away from anyone else, and no one went in that room, and no one came out of that room, and no one knew what went on in that room. And actually, I was different, and there were two things that made me different. Number one was that I was female, and in those days, there were virtually no females in the tech industry. And number two is I could communicate between programmers and tech. I understood the programming and the tech, and I also understood the business. And I actually got promoted very early on in my career, or got into positions of management quite early on, project management and project direction very early on in my career, because I had that quite unique combination. So I found myself sort of managing and directing projects pretty much like I'm sure lots of your audience find, where you don't start out necessarily as being a project manager, but you kind of end up being a project manager because somehow you become responsible for the project, and then you sort of slide into that role and responsibility. So that's kind of where I originally came from. And there, you know, I mean, I could sort of talk about a number of different scenarios where I was being put in this position of quite senior management, and I just didn't have the skill set or the training, or I didn't know what on earth I was doing a lot of the time, and I really felt very much out of my depth. There's one particular project one particular job I was in, and I was actually running, it was for a digital TV, an interactive TV station. And I remember getting called into my boss's office, and at the time I remember walking into my boss and sort of, you know how you're sort of trying to look really relaxed and cool, but actually you're like, you know, what's going on? And he sat there and he said to me, look, we're really sorry, but we're making about 20 people redundant, and you're one of them. And I remember thinking, you know, I've worked my butt off for the last 14 months delivering this project. I was delivering the kind of key project for the company. What am I doing wrong? You know, what is it that I'm not doing? Why am I being made redundant? And actually, there was someone else, a guy called James, who was They had decided to keep James. And actually, I was the one managing that project, but they decided to keep him as the person, you know, as the decision between the two of us, because he had connections in the industry or something like that. And I sort of remember being at my parents' house, because I don't know about you, Nigel, but if you get made redundant, normally it's just before Christmas. If anyone's had that, it's the end of the tax year, right? And they obviously, companies who are feeling like they need to downsize go, oh, we've got to downsize before we get into the next tax year. And so I found myself at my parents' house at Christmas while everyone's sort of having fun and enjoying themselves. I sort of sat there thinking, you know, oh my God, I haven't got a job. What am I going to do? What's wrong with me? Why did I get made redundant? What, you know, all of this thing. And I remember walking around the garden on, you know, the day after Boxing Day, as it's called here. And suddenly it occurred to me what James was doing. Because it's like, what is James? Is it me? Is it something wrong with my personality? Is it something I wasn't doing? And it suddenly occurred to me that actually what James was doing, which I wasn't. And what James was doing that I wasn't, was James was actually he was interacting with the senior team on a regular basis. He was talking to our boss, he was having coffee, he was going out for drinks, he was having lunch, he was dropping in on the senior manager's team. He was doing all of that stuff. And what was I doing? I was working really hard getting the project done. And the reason the senior management team didn't see all the hard work that I put in was because they didn't see me at all, right? They didn't, you know, I was just part of the team somewhere. And whereas James was being visible in the workplace. And it was one of those sort of pivotal moments in my career where I was like, oh, okay. So actually all my effort of working hard 24/7, you know, getting the project delivered was actually, there's another layer of what else I need to do in my job so that I can secure my job as it was back there, but also be able to promote myself and get myself on that career path. So in a number of events happening, that was one of the really key pivotal moments where I realized that there were other skills and tools and other parts of my job that I needed to do to be able to get ahead in my career. And that's really the path of where I came from and where I got to in my project management's career, for sure.
That's interesting. It's something, and it echoes with me in conversations I've had with about my career.
Yeah.
It echoes with me with conversations I've had with people who work with me about their career. And I've had that the word should, which it should be taken from the dictionary, where people sit there and I've done it and say, well, I should be fairly rewarded for doing a good job. That's absolutely true. You should be fairly rewarded. You should be given the opportunities. You should be able to go out there. But the logistics of actually doing that for a manager or for a senior leadership team, of being in a position where they can gather data and assess everyone in the company and give and then judge them and give them what they should have.
Mm.
I'm doing Joey air quotes for listeners there.
yeah.
It's just not practical, which means it doesn't level the playing field.
Mm.
And which is hard. And I've had a few people I've talked to, and I've said it myself as well, about not, you kind of get the people who are schmoozing out there always appear to be, now, and it's always seen as a negative, always appear to be in that relationship with the senior management, in that relationship with different people, putting the time in to do that, build their relationships with the level up and the level below and that kind of thing. And you do, and it's true, you will get people who, because they are visible, move quicker than others, even though they don't do a great job.
Mm.
Because they will be perceived as being a great job, because most organisations don't measure how good a job you do very well, because again, it's subjective. Certainly, I find it sort of in if you are building widgets and your target is to build 400 widgets and you build 500 widgets, tick, measure, easy to measure. If you're cutting code, if you're delivering to customer, you're answering phone calls successfully to customers, some of it can be measured, but not all of it. And then when you start getting into the middle management arena, 90% of the job is
intangible.
There's a lot of subjectiveness in there. It's about how you're doing it, not what you're doing. Like, you might have your finance, how well have you done in your finance out and things like that. But I think the thing I find, for me, it was frustrating in that, well, you've got all this time and you, as a project manager, I think that we do get delved down into delivering a good project, delivering that time, cost, quality. And we throw everything into that and smash ourselves on the rocks of the project, deliver the damn thing, and everyone goes, all right, well done. And actually, if you're doing a really good job as a project manager, you haven't had to report any problems to anyone about that project.
Exactly.
I'm not saying that people who do have to report them are doing anything wrong. Do you know what I mean? Ones who do report things or have problems, because sometimes you have projects that are difficult and you do have problems, and therefore your visibility. And it's really weird how you'll see a project that is a complete pig's ear. You don't know whether it's been managed well, but the person who's having to talk to that senior executive week in or daily, then how that person operates, that senior executive has a chance to see how that person operates on a day-to-day basis. And if they work weekly, daily with that senior leader and they're giving them updates and they're doing a good job of giving the updates, they seem to be in control, man, there's a forum for that. Whereas not all of us as a project manager, and certainly with kind of things I'm in consulting project management, where you'll have a lot of varied projects, you're not like an organizational, it's so difficult to be visible and get that recognition.
I think I think you've touched on two core things here, and from a project manager's perspective, especially, and having come from there, I think number one is that there are principles of human behavior. It's not luck. It's not who's more charismatic. It's not principles of human behavior is. And I think it's really important as a project manager to remember that, or any professional, is that the people, those senior stakeholders who you're reporting into, who you're communicating to, they are human too. And what they have got their lives full of, requirements, requests, deliverables, politics, blah, blah, everything is going on in their life. And they're not thinking about you. They're not thinking about you at all. And they're not thinking about your project, about whether it's on time, whether it's on budget, whether you've got the result. They're not thinking about that at all. They're thinking about their own stuff. And they're also thinking at a level above. And so, and we all are. And I think just sort of taking that as that is a fact, is that when you're interacting with them, that there are ways of interacting with them in a better way anyway when you're reporting in on your project, but really making sure that you take those interactions and you take those opportunities to become visible. And I always think project managers, and it made me smile because you're right. If we are doing our job well, then no one should notice we're doing it. Almost right. And when we're doing the job badly, that's when we get the flak from the CEO or whoever else is in the business. And actually, I remember being working in a project and the same scenario. And when I kept saying, I need more resource, I need more resource, I need more resource, and they didn't get me more resource. And when I left, they hired three people to do my job, and it's that kind of no one knows until you're gone how much hard work you're putting in. So I think that the sort of takeaway is, A, to recognize that those senior, no one is going to notice you doing a really good job unless you communicate that to the people that are going to be making those decisions. And it's not about being brash, and it's not about being egotistical, and it's not about, you know, being arrogant. It's about having the right strategies to do it in a tactful way and to take the opportunities when they're in front of you. And I think if I could give my project manager self some advice, is that even though you're busy 24/7 and you're, you know, getting those projects through at those critical times, you have to spend some time investing in your career and investing in the relationships that you build in the workplace, because that will pay you back, you know, a thousand times as you go forward in your career. So I think those two points, you have to accept that no one is going to notice your hard work, really. The only person who's going to possibly pay a bit of attention might be your boss at your end of year review and go, oh yeah, you did do all this. Yeah, yeah, you did do all this. Everyone else is too busy on their own stuff, right? And so it's about being able to communicate in a way that is congruent with what you're doing and yourself, so that people are going, oh, right, yeah, we want Nigel on that project because we know he's done X, Y, and Z, and we know he can do this, and we know he's doing it. You're helping the senior managers make their decisions for them by telling them and informing them what you're capable of doing. So I think that's really, if you take nothing else from this podcast, take those two things away. And I think that will just shift the way people go about their sort of day-to-day and month work. And as good project managers, you know, put it into the schedule, put it into the timeline, put it into everything that you're doing, but don't let it, you know, slip because you're too bit. Everyone's too busy all of the time, right? There's never.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't think in the last 10 years I've had a point where I've gone, do you know, I've got hardly anything to do this month. I might focus on my, you know, it just doesn't happen like that, does it, at all?
No, it's a conversation I've heard many times before. It's really on the Manager Tools podcast, I heard them talk about something called delegate to the floor, to the point where there are certain things you're just going to throw on the floor. Someone's going to moan at you.
Yeah.
But you're just not going to do it because there are, it doesn't support your priorities. It doesn't support your objectives that you've got with your manager. It doesn't report the results you've been asked to deliver. And actually, there's not enough time to do everything. So therefore, there must be some things that you just don't do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it's easy for us as people to go, well, I'm not going to do the training this week. Mm. I'll put my training off, or I'll put my this career progression off, or chasing some feedback. Do all those things that they're important but not urgent, and they're focused on you. Always put those to the side. I've been guilty of it from just physical health. Yeah, there you go. There's a perfect one. Prioritizing our physical health. That should be our number one priority. But most of our physical health issues will be important, but they're not urgent because it's in 10 years or 20 years you're going to reap the benefits of those extra bag of Cheetos or that extra Mars bar or whatever, or that sitting around not, or working a 12-hour day instead of getting out of the office, going for a walk.
Those
are the things, and it's always those things that you push. And this, I think this whole career management falls into that, into that kind of priority setting. And actually, it's sometimes we have to look at our priorities, and we should be doing the urgent and important. But quite often then what we do is the urgent and unimportant next on our priority list. And I mean, it should be the not urgent and important second.
I know when I, you know, years back when I came, I was in a job where it was impossible for me to do everything, read all my emails, respond to it. It just was absolutely impossible. And I think if you let yourself run down that road of thought, you just get so overwhelmed and you end up doing the things that aren't urgent but are easy to do or whatever. You know, you're not doing the right things. And I really became a disciple of the 80-20 principle, which was every day identifying what's my 20% that's going to give my 80%, and allowing myself, no matter who screamed and shouted or who wrote 10,000 emails or who picked up the phone and whatever, is to say, you know what, all those things I drop, all those things, like, that is okay. And actually, in 2 weeks' time, no one's going to know anyway. No one, everyone's on to the next big hassle, crisis, whatever. So actually being focused on what is the 20% that's going to give you that maximum return in the project you're managing and also in your career. You know, what are the things I should be doing that is going to enable me to fast track my career? And actually spending time on that and making it a non-negotiable every week so that you know that you're in a better position, whether it's 3 months down the line, 6 months or 6 years, you've got those things in place that you need in place to be able to give you the options that you want and really to put yourself in a position where people want you working on their projects. So it's a habit, isn't it? It's a habit that you have to really tone and be able to let things slip. And it's quite hard to do. And I think it's something I remember sort of going through that sort of painful process when you're like, oh, but you cannot do everything. We're just in a world that doesn't allow us to do that. So it's about feeling in control and making the right decisions so that you're like, you know what? I know that person's going to ring me up and hassle me about that, but that isn't as important as doing this set of tasks or this work on my career or whatever. And I think you kind of build a muscle and you get your skin gets thicker. So you can sort of bat it off a bit, I think.
Yeah.
I've got like rhinoceros skin, I think, on my arms from doing that.
I know. And I think it's important. And I know others would have heard this on the show, the fact that I spent 5 months where I was off. I burnt out a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And I was off for 5 months. And it's about boundaries. It's what happened to me. I wasn't sticking to my boundaries. I wasn't setting them up. All COVID going on and some other things as well. But fundamentally, not holding to my boundaries 80% of the time was what I wasn't doing, and kind of doing that self-prioritization. And I think it's it leads to you allowing others to take control. And in one of the chapters in my book, I wrote about the fact that you say, if you let, it's Rush is one of my favorite bands, and they have a song called Free Will, and the line in it is, if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice.
Yes.
And it's kind of, that's what we do by choosing not to plan what we're doing in our career, by choosing not to decide what we are and aren't going to do today, by letting our inbox decide we're going to read the next email that came in rather than put some tools in to get rid of that. We're giving over control to other people, and that's the decision we're making. But you might as well go, right, okay, tell me what to do, everyone else in the organization, and I'll just do it, which is ridiculous. But and we just end up getting that, as you say, those little things that you feel like you're progressing because you've cleared 10 things out of your inbox.
Yeah, they're not important.
But they weren't necessarily the things to do that day. And and there's the whole productivity thing is something I've always kind of, I was about to say, try and master, continually improve is what I meant. It's is because there's always a little bit more crap that you can get rid of out of your day to allow you to focus on the important.
Definitely.
And that's the and it's not crap to the other people who are sending it you. It's not crap to other people who think you should do it, but to you and your objectives it doesn't apply, and therefore you have to be brutal. And say there was something, I can't remember what it was, but it was on LinkedIn about saying no was about how priority management worked, not on what to say to no. Being able to say no, and when you've said yes and realize actually I should have said no, being brave enough to say no then as well. And
I
that
think
free
also,
and what
God, I was just going to say, I think there's also a factor where, I mean, we're not wanting to get into just productivity, but there's also a factor of, you train the way people expect you to respond. So if you are constantly responding like that to everything that they want, then that is, you set that expectation.
Yeah.
And it's all about really making sure what is a priority for you, how you set up your time, how you set up, you know, what is it that I mean, and there's a million productivity tools out there, isn't there? There's tons and tons. And actually, I've kind of used a million of them, and I kind of get down to just a few. And one of the key ones for me, and I've mentioned it already, is going every single day, what's my 20%? What is my 20% today? And so I'm starting on that 20%. So anything that isn't involved in that 20%, unless it's an emergency, that's the answer. The answer is.
Yeah.
And I think there's also culturally, I've worked in places where if you didn't answer an email within an hour, people are like banging on your door going, where are you? Why haven't you answered? You know, so I also understand that in some companies, that expectation is also there. And I think
you set up a rule then, though, don't you, that just says, thank you for your email. I'll deal with it in 3 hours.
Yeah.
It's been answered in an hour, sorted.
You're not going to die. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, there are pressures. And I think, you know, we sort of got into the conversation, which is fundamentally it is important to everybody's career to spend time on it consistently and have a plan to implement consistently so that you are getting into situations where you have a lot of options, you've built the relationships, you can negotiate promotions and pay rises and new jobs and all of that stuff, and you're not getting to the end of projects and going, right, what am I going to do now? You know, what's next? Kind of thing. It's something that you decide, and you mentioned just making that decision to really allocate some time to that in the week.
Yeah, and it's something that I think I've done better over the years. I was talking to someone it was a couple of years ago now, I think it is, and it was over online, and they used to always say this thing where they didn't work on a Friday.
Mm.
And they spent the whole Friday on self-development.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way that they had their lives set up. They were independent, worked themselves and did things. And that's how they chose to do it, which sounds like really, and it kind of, whilst we've got a mix, when you are employed within a role that you're not a freelancer and own that role, you have less flexibility. But there is still that point of going, well, this is when I'm going to devote to me. Is there an hour? Is it a Friday afternoon where you have an hour for your career, an hour for doing some training, and you do that time, you make that time available. Mm. And as you said, it's the habit, isn't it? Mm. And if you don't do it now and you don't do it, great. If you put it in every week for the next 52 weeks and you don't do half of them, you've done 26 weeks worth of focusing on your career. And even if you do, you've still done, that's 26 hours. That's nearly a week, isn't it?
Mm.
And even if you do half it, it's 13 hours. You know what I mean? It's significant amounts of time to actually make a difference to your career.
And I think you have to find what works for you. So, for instance, I schedule an hour in my I get up early, so I have no issue. I'm just like, I'll just get up early. Yeah. You know, whatever's going on in the day. But actually, there is so much importance to having that time in your schedule. And actually, I allocate an hour every day to work on myself. And I don't mean that in a sort of, I mean that maybe that's reading a book, maybe that's watching some content, maybe that is sitting quietly for an hour. Maybe, you know, because when people come into like my team, when I used to manage team, and say, you know, I work from 7 till 11, I'm just like, so how productive are you? I bet you I could be more productive because I've just got better habits in place. So I think it's about finding the habits that work for you, for sure, and creating them so that they really work for you and work for you sort of immediately on what's on your plate today, but also knowing that you're investing in your future, investing in the relationships that you need to put in place, and doing that sort of visibility part of your job that is going to pay you back so much so as you go forward in your career, no matter where you are right now.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the first part of that chat with Laura. and come back next week and you can have a listen to the second part. Cheers. So this is my final wrap-up. Every week you're going to hear this, you're going to get bored of it, but you can always click next podcast if so. If you have enjoyed it, if you listen to this podcast, the end of this show, and you think, that was great, I'd love to be able to help Nige out, there are loads of ways you can do it. The first and obvious way is to share the podcast. Send it out to people. If you know colleagues and friends who'd benefit from it, you think they'd enjoy it, just send them the link. Grab one of the links, or send them to www.nigelcreaser.com/podcasts. That's www.nigelcreaser.com/podcasts, and that'll push them over to a Linktree link, and it's got all of the different ways they can consume the podcast. If you are feeling generous and have a big bag of cash, you could grab a copy of one of my books. Obviously, they're available in all the usual places, and print and digital. Again, jump on the website, www.nigelcreaser.com/shop, and that will give you a list of all the different ways that you can contribute and grab copies of the book. Also got links to all my guests' books on there as well, where I get a little bit of a kickback from them. If you are of a sporting mind, I have a number through doing some of my judo and running antics. I've managed to secure a few affiliate links and affiliates there as well. So in there, somewhere in the sponsors page, there's links to those as well. So clicking onto those and grabbing if you're looking to get super fit, then that would be fabulous as well, and I get a little kickback from those. I have a Patreon account. It's patreon.com/sundaylunchpm. So again, you can ping something in there, buy me a coffee or whatever. And finally, obviously the most important is coming back, listen again, because the more of you that come back, the more visibility I get, because there's more times that it's downloaded and all the SEO works and things like that. So yeah, that's it. So if you can help me out, I would be much appreciated. If you can't, don't worry about it. Thank you very much. Cheers now. Bye. Well, it's goodbye from me, Nigel Creaser, and it's goodbye from him, the Sunday Lunch PM. Goodbye.